Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Read Aloud of Wonder. I am on page 101, and it is the chapter titled High School. What I always loved most about middle school was that it was separate and different from home. I could go there and be Olivia Pullman, not Via, which is my name at home. Via was what they called me in elementary school, too. Back then, everyone knew all about us, of course. Mom used to pick me up after school, and August was always in the stroller. There weren't a lot of people who were equipped to babysit for Augie, so Mom and Dad brought him to all my class plays and concerts and recitals, all the school functions, the bake sales, and the book fairs. My friends knew him. My friends' parents knew him. My teachers knew him. The janitor knew him. "Hey, how you doing, Augie?" he'd say, and give August a high five. August was something of a fixture at PS 22. But in middle school, a lot of people didn't know about August. My old friends did, of course, but my new friends didn't. Or if they knew, it wasn't necessarily the first time they knew about me. Maybe it was the second or third thing they'd heard about me. "Olivia, yeah, she's nice. Did you hear she has a brother who's deformed?" I always hated that word, but I knew it was how people described Augie. And I knew those kind of conversations probably happened all the time out of earshot. Every time I left the room at a party or bumped into groups of friends at the pizza place. And that's okay. I'm always going to be the sister of a kid with birth defects. That's not the issue. I just don't always want to be defined that way. The best thing about high school is that hardly anybody knows me at all. Except Miranda and Ella, of course. And they know not to walk around talking about it. Miranda, Ella, and I have known each other since first grade. What's so nice is we have never had to explain things to one another. When I decided I want to them to call me Olivia instead of Via, they got it without me having to explain. They've known August since he was a little baby. When we were little, our favorite thing to do was play dress-up with Augie. Load him up with feather boas and big hats and Hannah Montana wigs. He used to love it, of course, and we thought he was adorably cute in his own way. Ella said he reminded her of E.T. She didn't say this to be mean, of course, though maybe it was a little bit mean. The truth is, there's a scene in the movie where Drew Barrymore dresses E.T. in a blonde wig, and that was a ringer for Augie in our Miley Cyrus heyday. Throughout middle school, Miranda, Ella, and I were pretty much our own little group, somewhere between super popular and well-liked. Not brainy, not jocks, not rich, not druggies, not mean, not goody-goody. I don't know if the three of us found each other because we were so alike in so many ways, or that because we found each other, we've become so alike in so many ways. We were so happy when we all got into Faulkner High School. It was such a long shot that all three of us would be accepted, especially when almost no one else from our middle school was. I remember how we screamed into our phones the day we got our acceptance letters. This is why I haven't understood what's been going on with us lately, now that we're actually in high school. It's nothing like how I thought it would be. Major Tom. Out of the three of us, Miranda had almost always been the sweetest to August, hugging him and playing with him long after Ella and I had moved on to playing something else. Even as we got older, Miranda always made sure to try to include August in our conversations, ask him how he was doing, talk to him about Avatar or Star Wars or Bone or something she knew he liked. It was Miranda who had given Augie the astronaut helmet he wore practically every day for the year when he was 5 or 6. She would call him Major Tom, and they would sing Space Oddity by David Bowie together. It was their little thing. They knew all the words and would blast it on the iPod and sing the song out loud. Since Miranda's always been really good about calling us as soon as she got home from summer camp, I was a little surprised when I didn't hear from her. I even texted her and she didn't reply. I figured maybe she ended up staying in the camp longer now that she was a counselor. Maybe she met a cute guy. Then I realized from her Facebook wall that she'd actually been back home for a full 2 weeks. So I sent her an IM and we chatted online a bit. But she didn't give me a reason for not calling, which I thought was bizarre. Miranda had always been a little flaky, so I figured that's all it was. We made plans to meet downtown, but then I had to cancel because we're driving out to visit Tata and Popa for the weekend. So I ended up not seeing either Miranda or Ella until the first day of school. And I have to admit, I was shocked. Miranda looked so different. Her hair was cut into this super cute bob that she dyed bright pink, of all things. And she was wearing a striped tube top that A, seemed way inappropriate for school, and B, was totally not her usual style. Miranda had always been such a prude about clothes, and here she was, all pink-haired and tube-topped. But it wasn't just the way she looked that was different. She was acting differently, too. I can't say she wasn't nice, because she was, but she seemed kind of distant, like I was a casual friend. It was the weirdest thing in the world. At lunch, the three of us sat together like we always used to, but the dynamics had shifted. It was obvious to me that Ella and Miranda had gotten together a few times during the summer without me, though they never actually said that. I pretended not to be all that upset while we talked, though. I could feel my face getting hot, my smile being fake. Although Ella wasn't as over the top as Miranda, I noticed a change in her unusual style too. It's the way they had talked to each other beforehand about redoing their image at the new school, but hadn't bothered to clue me in. I admit, I had always thought I was above this kind of typical teenager pettiness, but I felt a lump in my throat throughout lunch. My voice quivered as I said, "See you later," when the bell rang. After school. "I hear we're driving you home today." It was Miranda in eighth period. She had just sat down at the desk right behind me. I had forgotten that Mom had called Miranda's mother the night before to ask if she could drive me home from school. "You don't have to," I answered instinctively, casually. "My mom can pick me up." I thought she had to pick Augie up or something. "It turns out she can pick me up afterward. She just texted me. Not a problem." "Oh, okay. Thanks." It was all a lie on my part, but I couldn't see sitting in a car with the new Miranda. After school, I ducked into the restroom to avoid bumping into Miranda's mother outside. Half an hour later, I walked out of the school, ran the 3 blocks to the bus stop, hopped on the M86, to Central Park West, and took the subway home. "Hey there, sweetie," Mom said the moment I stepped through the front door. "How was your first day?" "I was starting to wonder where you guys were. We stopped for pizza." Incredible how easily a lie can slip through your lips. "Is Miranda not with you?" She seemed surprised that Miranda wasn't right behind me. "She went straight home. We have a lot of homework." "On your first day?" "Yes, on our first day," I yelled, which completely surprised Mom. But before she could say anything else, "School is fine. It's really big, though. The kids seem nice." I wanted to give her enough information so she wouldn't feel the need to ask me more. "How was Augie's first day of school?" Mom hesitated, her eyebrows still high on her forehead, like when I'd snapped at her a second earlier. "Okay," she said slowly, like she was letting out her breath. "What do you mean, okay?" I said. "Was it good or bad?" "He said it was good." "So why do you think it wasn't good?" "I didn't say it wasn't good. Geez, Via, what's up with you?" "Just forget it." "I asked anything at all," I answered, and stormed dramatically into Augie's room and slammed the door. He was on his PlayStation and didn't even look up. I hated how zombified the video games made him. "So how was school?" I said, scooching Daisy over so I can sit next to him on his bed. "Fine," he answered, still not looking up from his game. "Augie, I'm talking to you." I pulled the PlayStation out of his hands. "Hey," he said angrily. How was school? I said, fine, he yelled back, grabbing the PlayStation back from me. Were people nice to you? Yes. No one was mean. He put the PlayStation down and looked up at me as he had just asked the dumbest question in the world. Why would people be mean? He said. It was the first time in his life that I heard him be sarcastic like that. I didn't think he had it in him. The Padawan bites the dust. I'm not sure at what point that night Augie had cut off his Padawan braid, or why that made me really mad. I had always found his obsession with everything Star Wars kind of geeky, and that braid in the back of his hair with its little beads was just awful. But he had always been so proud of it, of how long it took him to grow it, of how he had chosen the beads himself in a craft store in Soho. He and Christopher, his best friend, used to play with lightsabers and Star Wars stuff whenever they got together, and they had both started growing their braids at the same time. When Augie cut his braid off that night without an explanation, without telling me beforehand, which was surprising, or even calling Christopher, I was just so upset. I can't even explain why. I've seen Augie brushing his hair in the bathroom mirror. He meticulously tries to get every hair in place. He tilts his head to look at himself from different angles, like there's some magic perspective inside the mirror that could change the dimensions of his face. Mom knocked on my door after dinner. She looked drained, and I realized that between me and Augie, today had been a tough day for her too. So you want me to tell you what's up? She said nicely, softly. Not now, okay, I answered. I was reading. I was tired. Maybe later I'd be up to telling her about Miranda, but not now. I'll check in before you go to bed, she said. And then she came over and kissed me on the top of the head. Can Daisy sleep with me tonight? Sure. I'll bring her in later. Don't forget to come back, I said as she left. I promise. But she didn't come back that night. Dad did. He told me Augie had had a bad first day and Mom was helping him through it. He asked me how my day had gone and I told him fine. He said he didn't believe me for a second and I told him Miranda and Ella were acting like jerks. I didn't mention how I took the subway home by myself, though. He said nothing tests friendships like high school and then proceeded to poke fun at the fact that I was reading War and Peace. Not real fun, of course, since I'd heard him brag about to people that he had a 15-year-old who was reading Tolstoy. But he liked to rib me about it when I was where I was in the book, in the war part or the peace part, and if there was anything in there about Napoleon's days as a hip-hop dancer. It was stuff like that. But Dad always managed to make everyone laugh, and sometimes that's all you need to feel better. Don't be mad at Mom, he said as he bent down to give me a goodnight kiss. You know how much she worries about Augie. I know, I acknowledged. Want the light on or off? It's getting kind of late, he said, pausing by the light switch at the door. Can you bring Daisy in first? 2 seconds later, he came back with Daisy dangling in his arms, and he laid her down next to me on the bed. Good night, sweetheart, he said, kissing my forehead. He kissed Daisy on her forehead, too. Good night, girlie. Sweet dreams. An apparition at the door. Once I got up in the middle of the night because I was thirsty, and I saw Mom standing outside Augie's room. Her hand was on the doorknob, her forehead leaning on the door, which was ajar. She wasn't going in his room or stepping out, just standing right outside the door, as if she was listening to the sound of his breathing as he slept. The hallway lights were out. The only thing illuminating her was the blue nightlight in August's bedroom. She looked ghost-like standing there, or maybe I should say angelic. I tried to walk back into my room without disturbing her, but she heard me and walked over to me. Is Augie okay? I asked. I knew that sometimes he woke up choking on his own saliva if he accidentally turned over on his back. Oh, he's fine, she said, wrapping her arms around me. She walked me back into my room, pulled the covers over me, and kissed me goodnight. She never explained what she was doing outside his door, and I never asked. I wonder how many nights she stood outside his door, and I wonder if she's ever stood outside my door like that. Breakfast. Can you pick me up from school today? I said the next morning, smearing some cream cheese on my bagel. Mom was making August's lunch, American cheese on whole wheat bread, soft enough for Augie to eat, while August sat eating oatmeal at the table. Dad was getting ready to go to work. Now that I was in high school, the new school routine was going to be that Dad and I would take the subway together in the morning, which meant his having to leave 15 minutes earlier than usual. And then I'd get off at my stop and he'd keep going. And Mom was going to pick me up after school in the car. I was going to call Miranda's mother to see if she could drive you home again, Mom answered. No, Mom, I said quickly. You can pick me up, or I'll just take the subway. You know I don't want you to take the subway by yourself yet, she answered. Mom, I'm 15. Everybody my age takes the subway by themselves. She can take the subway home, said Dad from the other room, adjusting his tie as he stepped into the kitchen. Why can't Miranda's mother just pick her up again? Mom argued with him. She's old enough to take the subway by herself, Dad insisted. Mom looked at both of us. Is something going on? She didn't address her question to either one of us in particular. You would know if you had come back to check on me, I said spitefully, like you said you would. Oh, God, Via, said Mom, remembering now that she had completely ditched me last night. She put down the knife she was using to cut Augie's grapes in half, still a choking hazard for him because of the size of his palate. I'm so sorry. I fell asleep in Augie's room. By the time I woke up, I know, I nodded indifferently. Mom came over, put her hands on my cheeks, and lifted my face to look at her. I'm really, really sorry, she whispered. I could tell she was. It's okay, I said. Via, Mom, it's fine. This time I meant it. She looked so genuinely sorry, I just wanted to let her off the hook. She kissed and hugged me, then returned to the grapes. So is something going on with Miranda, she asked. Just that she's acting like a complete jerk, I said. Miranda's not a jerk, Augie quickly chimed in. She can be, I yelled. Believe me. Okay, then, I'll pick you up, no problem, Mom said decisively, sweeping the half-grapes into a snack bag with the side of her knife. That was the plan all along, anyway. I'll pick Augie up from school in the car, and then we'll pick you up. We'll probably get there about 3:45. No, I said firmly, before she'd even finished. Isabel, she can take the subway, said Dad impatiently. She's a big girl now. She's reading War and Peace, for crying out loud. What does War and Peace have to do with anything? Answered Mom, clearly annoyed. It means you don't have to pick her up in the car like she's a little girl, he said sternly. Via, are you ready? Get your bag and let's go. I'm ready, I said, pulling on my backpack. Bye, Mom. Bye, Augie. I kissed them both quickly and headed toward the door. Do you even have a Metro card? Mom said after me. Of course she has a Metro card, answered Dad, fully exasperated. Jeesh, Mama. Stop worrying so much. Bye, he said, kissing her on the cheek. Bye, big boy, he said to August, kissing him on the top of his head. I'm proud of you. Have a good day. Bye, Daddy, you too. Dad and I jogged down the stoop stairs and headed down the block. Call me after school before you get on the subway, Mom yelled out at me from the window. I didn't even turn around, but waved my hand at her so she knew I heard her. Dad did turn around, walking backward a few steps. War and peace, Isabel, he called out, smiling as he pointed at me. War and peace. Genetics 101. Both sides of Dad's family were Jews from Russia and Poland. Popa's grandparents fled the pogroms and ended up in New York City at the turn of the century. Tata's parents fled the Nazis and ended up in Argentina in the 40s. Popa and Tata met at a dance on the Lower East Side while she was in town visiting a cousin. They got married, moved to Bayside, and had Dad and Uncle Ben. Mom's side of the family is from Brazil, except for her mother, my beautiful grands, and her dad, Augusto, who died before I was born. The rest of Mom's family, all her glamorous aunts, uncles, and cousins, still live in Alto Leblon, a ritzy suburb south of Rio. Grandson Augusto moved to Boston in the early 60s and had Mom and Aunt Kate, who's married to Uncle Porter. Mom and Dad met at Brown University and have been together ever since. Isabel and Nate, like two peas in a pod. They moved to New York right after college, had me a few years later, then moved to a brick townhouse in Northern River Heights, the hippie stroller capital of upper Manhattan, when I was about a year old. Not one person in the exotic mix of my family gene pool has ever shown any obvious signs of having what August has. I've pored over grainy pictures of long-dead relatives and babushkas, black-and-white snapshots of distant cousins in crisp white linen suits, soldiers in uniforms, ladies with beehive hairdos, Polaroids of bell-bottom teenagers and long-haired hippies, and not once have I been able to detect even the slightest trace of August's face in their faces. Not a one. But after August was born, my parents underwent genetic counseling. They were told that August had what seemed to be a previously unknown type of mandibulofacial dysostosis caused by an autosomal recessive mutation in the TCOF1 gene, which is located on chromosome 5, complicated by a hemifacial microsomia characteristic of OAV spectrum. Sometimes these mutations occur during pregnancy. Sometimes they're inherited from one parent carrying the dominant gene. Sometimes they're caused by the interaction of many genes, possibly in combination with environmental factors. This is called multifactorial inheritance. In August's case, the doctors were able to identify one of the single nucleotide deletion mutations that made war on his face. The weird thing is, though, that you'd never know it from looking at them. Both my parents carry that mutant gene, and I carry it, too. The next chapter is titled The Punnett Square, and it starts on page 115, which is where I'm going to pick up next time. Have a great day, everyone.